Hi, this is Marie Wallace, here in New York, appearing in an American Renaissance Theater Company production of Winterworks 2018, Look Me in the Eyes. And I'm talking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on the Dave's Gone By show on UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, my friends. This is your old buddy, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York, and spiritual leader.
Well, so great to talk to you, Rabbi.
Oh.
Always a pleasure.
That joyous voice on the other end of the line is an actress, someone who has been doing Broadway and off-Broadway and regional theater for a few decades now, and she's still back on stage. You can go see her in a one-act play over from the American Renaissance Theater Company. They're doing it at the Direct Company on West 43rd Street. She'll tell you all about it, but she'll also tell us about when she was in the original Gypsy, and when she was in Sweet Charity, and the amazing people that she worked with, and I don't know why I'm talking like this. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the neighborhood, Marie Wallace. Shalom, Marie.
Shalom. So good to be here. Thank you.
Oh, you're
for inviting me.
Oh, anytime, anytime, a million times, because we are delighted to talk to someone who has so much background in the theater, and I didn't even mention that she was a shadowy figure, because she was in the TV show Dark Shadows, and we'll talk about that too, so welcome again.
Welcome, welcome. I'm so happy to be welcomed. Thank you.
The only bad part is, the only negative part is, that you yourself are not Jewish. However,
oh, no, but I was married to a Jewish man. Does that count?
Oh, it almost does. You're Jewish by injection, as it were. So,
okay, and here's a fun little note. I worked at the Actors Temple in New York with Larry Storch. We did Love Letters a couple of years ago.
Larry Storch from F-Trip. How is he? This is a couple of years ago, but how was he?
Larry Storch is wonderful. We had originally worked up in the Hampton Playhouse, I think between shows from the Dark Shadows. You know, I kept playing many parts. So when I finish one part, I go off and do Summersock. And that year, I worked with Larry, and he was just a delight. And we've been friends ever since. And I was at his 95th birthday the other night.
Oh, my muscle, I didn't realize. Oh, is he in physical, decent, okay condition for a 95?
He is, and he has the wonder of a young man. When we had the most wonderful music group, we had wonderful actresses. Barbara Feldon came with a wonderful birthday cake. It was just a wonderful, wonderful celebration.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear this and that you worked on that play. Love Letters, by the way, for people who do not know, is an epistolary play, because, you know, it's hog as a pistol. No, I'm kidding. That was terrible. But it has to do with, the nice thing is you don't have to memorize. You can read the play because they're reading letters to each other. The characters are. So you don't have to memorize. It's there in front of you.
It's an interesting way of doing things, isn't it? You know, it worked great. It's really fun, and you really can get into it. And those letters, I mean, it's beautifully written, so it was great.
You are... Yeah, I'm not going to say what age you are, but I think you're in the 70-something range. Am I correct on that?
I might be.
Possibly. So is it tougher to memorize for you now than it used to be? Or, nah, it is what it is.
Nah, here's what I think. I think that the reason everyone talks about older people not being able to memorize is that we start worrying about it. The fact that they say it, then we start saying, am I going to remember this? Will I remember this? Oh, I hope I don't forget. And, of course, that's the opening for forgetting. You could do it at 20, and you could do it at 60, and it can happen. Once the fear comes in, you know, then that's when you forget it. But if you just go in and say, I know what this is, and I know what I'm saying, and it just comes out. Look at Christopher Plummer. He's about 90 years old. He's doing long plays on Broadway still.
Oh, right. But then at the same time, my friend Dave, who produces and hosts this radio program of the air, he remembers seeing Don Ameche in a production of Our Town on Broadway, I guess about a decade and a half, 2 decades ago. And Ameche was into his senior years and, unfortunately, to some extent, senior moments, because he couldn't remember a word.
Oh, that is so... I mean, if that happened to me, I'd just say, no, no, I've done enough. Let me go to the beach and enjoy that, you know, because that's horrible to have had such a wonderful career and to, you know, end that way. That's terrible.
It was. Now maybe
let's not do it.
Maybe a week or two after he was in the role, if he stayed for a while, maybe it was just under rehearsed, but maybe not.
Well, that's right. You have to do your homework. I mean, whether you're 80 or 60 or 21. You've got to do the homework.
Now, you spoke about not letting fear or worry creep into things, but let's talk a little bit about fear as someone who's been on Broadway and musicals. Do you get stage fright? Not just from memorization, but that general backstage butterfly thing. And if so, how do you cope?
No, you know what I get? I get heightened excitement.
Ooh.
I won't say it's the ordinary thing that I'm just mostly calm, but I'm not frightened. I feel it's different. The only time I felt sort of fear was when, and it's the only time I ever replaced anyone on Broadway. Well, actually, I did it another time, but let's talk about this one. Sweet Charity, Sharon K. Ritchie, who had been a Miss America, and she was playing Ursula. And I was in a Broadway show called The Right Honorable Gentleman, which was an English drama. And at the same time, they had my agent called me and wanted me to audition for this role, which it was a lovely non-singing role in a musical, which usually isn't very good, but this was very nice. And but I was still busy in this play, so I never even auditioned. And my show closed, the Right Honorable Gentleman, I'm quite sure, on January 29th, and I think, I'm pretty sure that Charity opened on the same date or certainly around there. Within, oh God, I don't know, it was 3, 4, 5 weeks, I got a call from my agent. They're looking for a replacement. And Sharon left. And so I got in. Well, anyway, because
yeah.
I didn't rehearse with anyone, I met Gwen.
Gwen Verdon.
15 minutes before we were to go on. And I came out, and we were in the Palace. I'd never worked in such a large theater. I mean, the Broadway theater, which I did Gypsy in, was big, but the Palace is bigger. And I must say that's the only time my knees were shaking.
Wow.
I could feel my knees shaking, but just that first night. But I was able to, you know, it doesn't paralyze me or anything.
Now, I've heard very nice things about Gwen Verdon. Was she great backstage? Was she a nice...
Oh, fabulous, fabulous. Wonderful, wonderful lady. Was really great to work with. And we just enjoyed her so much. Everyone did. I think because she was a dancer. She started in the chorus. She understood, you know, that whole thing. And it was just a delight to be with her. Yep.
And also, interestingly enough, you made fast and long-term friends with another actress who was in Sweet Charity at the time. You're just hanging off with Ruth Buzzi. Was there a particular...
Yes, Ruth Buzzi.
Yeah.
Oh, God, we had such fun. We had such fun. And we both were in just one act, you know. So we both liked sewing, and we rented a sewing machine. And we would make clothes and all kinds of things. And we'd often show it to Gwen because she loved clothes and she loved things that were cut on the bias. And so did I. And I used to make clothes like that. And so at one point, it was after a year, and one of the dresses, I wore two. I had two costumes. One was really worn out and it was really looking crummy, which was not good for this wonderful Hollywood starlet.
Yeah.
So Gwen told them, we need a new dress. Go out and shop with her. They weren't going to remake it. It was Irene Sharaf, wonderful, great designer. And we went out, and all they were looking at were really inexpensive, cheap, I'll say, dresses. And so that night, Gwen said to me, so did you find a dress? I said, no. And I told her the kind of stuff we were looking at. She said, well, why don't you make your own? And I said, oh, that would be fun. She said, yeah, we'll pay for the materials. We'll get the wardrobe mistress to help you if you come into any problems, and we'll pay you $100. And I said, oh,
okay.
I don't want $100. I don't want any money. And so I went to the stage manager and told him that he he said, listen, Gwen is a major stockholder. She wants you to have $100. Take $100. Okay. And my best delight of that is that when they brought the production, not with all of us, but I mean a new production in London, and they copied the costumes, they didn't copy the original Irene Sheriff. They copied mine. So that was a great, great fun for me.
That's a real compliment, by the way. We're talking to Marie Wallace, who was in Sweet Charity, as we said, for a while. You were also in, I mean, and this is the original Gypsy. And you weren't a replacement cast member. You were there from the beginning.
I was there from the beginning. But, you know, I right now I'm in an American Renaissance Theater Company production, and that is so wonderful. And it's especially, I wanted to tell you about it because sure. It's only on for 2 weeks, and it's called Winter Works 2018, Look Me in the Eyes. And it's very interesting. It has 9 actors, 6 playwrights, and a poet. And so we have 6 plays, small, short plays,
sure. Mm-hmm.
All but with the same theme of coupling, and all different kinds of couples, a man and a woman who have been married for years, 2 women who have been friends forever, and strangers in the park, and that's my play. And it's called New York Encounter, which right away I was interested in because
New York.
Native New Yorker.
Right.
And I like, and it takes place in Central Park, which is my favorite place of all places.
Hmm.
And I'm having such a good time. It was written by Fran Hanman, who is a wonderful writer, and she also wrote the song that the entire ensemble does at the end. And my little play was directed by Elowyn Castle, and she's a marvel. She's directing, I think, she directed 3 or 4 of the plays. So it's a wonderful, and it's a very intimate setting, shall I say, and it's good because it is about intimate things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, that people are really enjoying it, and I know they'll continue to. I wish you were in New York. You'd come and be my guest.
That was Freud. Hello, don't tell my wife. Come and be your bed. But first of all, actually, let's get to that, too. A, we'll remind people that they can see you in the one-act play, A New York Encounter, as part of that Look Me in the Eyes festival at American Renaissance Theater. It's happening through February 4th, 2018, so you do have until then to see it at the Director's Company over on 43rd Street and 8th Avenue. But, speaking of kind of sexy in the costumes and stuff like that, you started as a model for a while?
I did. And I always considered, I never, was in love with modeling, but what I liked about it, I felt that it was my subsidy for off-Broadway. Because, you made no money. I mean, you make, it's not like you do it for nothing, but it's almost for nothing. But that's okay. But you need to pay the rent and you need to eat. So modeling was a great thing for me because I remember my first show before The Great Gypsy was off Broadway, and it was Sophocles' Electra and Terence Rattigan's Harlequinade. And I think we were paid all of $35.
It's more than I make right now. I'll take it. You want to try being a rabbi?
It's more than a lot of us make it at any 1 week, but sometimes you make a little more,
Right.
Anyway.
Do you have any memories of Harlequinade and Electra?
Well, the best part for me was that I was just starting out. I was very young. I was studying with Jack Manning, studying Shakespeare, and I had already just signed up, enrolled at NYU, and I was studying economics, and it was only a couple of months into it that my Jack Manning, the teacher, called me, because I had no agent or anything yet. I was probably about 17, and I'd just gotten out of high school, and he said, go over to the Rita Allen Theater and tell them I sent you, and you'll go and audition for Sophocles, Electra, and Harlequinade. So I did. I said, I'm Marie Wallace, and Jack Manning sent me. They let me in, I got to read, and who do I find out is directing it but Philip Burton. Philip Burton was a great Shakespearean scholar and director, and he was the one who actually, they called him the uncle of Burton, Richard Burton.
Oh.
In fact, he took his name from him, and he taught him, oh, that wonderful voice that Burton had, oh, my God. And so I was very thrilled to be in my first show, not being an apprentice and just doing, you know, junk work around the theater, but actually being in the Greek chorus and then having a nice part in Harlequinade. And Philip told us, because some people said, I don't understand, why are you doing a Greek tragedy with this little light comedy? And he said, that's the way the Greeks did it. They always had a little comedy and the tragedy.
And I think that was even carried into modern times when they do Greek show. It was Peter Brook or somebody like that. They do this really heavy, you know, Sophoclean tragedy. And then in the last 10 minutes, there'd be a thing where they're dancing around the giant penis. They bring on a phallus. No, for real. For real. They bring on a dick.
Well, no.
And they dance around it and sing and make noise and joyful things. That's what
Wonderful.
They would do.
Wonderful. Yeah. I know, I love it.
And that's what I do after my sermons on Saturday, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
Yeah, it's an interesting shul we have. We're talking with Marie Wallace here in the neighborhood. Now you skirted away. We were going to talk about Gypsy, but then you talked about the one-act play, which I understand, but I'm not letting you go.
That's what I'm doing now. And, no, Gypsy was a great experience because, again, I'd done that little off-Broadway play, and it was wonderful. But now my eyes were set on Broadway. And, of course, an agent called me and sent me for it and to be in the chorus again, from the Greek chorus to the Gypsy chorus. And my agent said, wear leotards and tights. I said, okay. I had no idea what that was. So I wore a bathing suit. And I got there, and we all got on stage, and it's sort of like chorus line, you know, first they look at you just by the way you look, and they eliminate this one and that one, and then finally we all that were picked to stay were told, do the showgirl walk. Well, I had no idea what the showgirl walk was, so I just got behind one of the big, tall girls, and I watched what she did. She put her arms out, and she took these long strides, and she was very sexy, and I just kept doing what she did, and we both were hired. So that was my entree into Gypsy Broadway.
Now, do you have any recollections of working with Julie Stein and Sondheim?
Yes, oh, sure. Not so much Sondheim. I didn't really get to talk to him, but did talk a lot with Julie Stein. And I remember once he said he wrote this for Ethel, but he wrote it as if he was writing for a trumpet.
Ooh.
Isn't that interesting?
And it makes sense, because also, here's the other deal. Like, we're talking about, I guess it was 1959, 1960, right, when Gypsy was happening. And now you go to a musical in the theater, and everything's blasting at you, and there's 25 amplifiers, and people have microphones crawling all over their bodies. Back then, you know, Ethel Merman was known as somebody who could stand on a stage and ping her voice to the back row, and everybody could hear her over all the orchestra, over all the brass. A, is that absolutely true? And B, since there was no miking back then, didn't you all have to do that?
Wait, yes, you were taught to really project. I hate when I go to the theater. And first of all, the whole sound of you know, loudspeakers and everything is just so horrible to me. And I cannot stand those little mics through their hair or coming out of their ears. And the first time I saw it, really, I thought this guy had a big mole on his cheek. And then I saw everybody having these, and I thought, what in the world is that? And I don't know what kind of voices they have, but to have a mic for every... And now Mike straight shows. Little off-Broadway shows, I see, Mike.
They do, because they get the TV actors. And the TV actors, they talk like this, and they're used to not moving their lips.
No. And it picks
up,
every TV actor worked like that, talked like that, except Dark Shadows. because we were bigger than life.
Well, since you met... I want to spend a little more time on Gypsy. Do you have any...
Okay.
Do you have any stories about La Merme?
Let's see. She was... You know, I wouldn't say she was friendly the way Gwen was friendly, or Robert Preston, who really knew you, knew the stagehands, knew their wives, and all that. So Ethel would say, "Hello, girls!" You know, wave to us, but never Marie or anyone else. And, in fact, I do remember something on Christmas. Our stage manager made an announcement and said, "Everybody in the chorus, come on downstairs in front of Miss Merman's dressing room." So we all piled down there, and we're standing on line, and he had a list of everyone's names. Of course, he knew our names anyway. And as we went in, say Barbara London, he would say, "Barbara London," and she'd say, "Merry Christmas, Barbara," and shove this package in her...
Oh.
Not her face, her arms.
Right, okay, yeah.
And we all thought, oh, okay, we're getting a big bottle of champagne, because that was about the size of it. And then, you know, Marie Wallace, "Oh, Merry Christmas, Marie," and, you know, hands that. So we all went running upstairs to the sixth floor, I think it was, in the Broadway Theater, and opened it. And the funniest thing is, it was cologne. And her husband was the manufacturer of this cologne. And it was cologne in a huge decanter. I have to tell you that it was sold at the Woolworths Five and Dime.
Oh, man. And it was her husband's manufacturer. She probably didn't have to pay anything for it. Oh.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, but at least she thought of giving us something.
Yeah, no, she didn't have to give you anything. That's you know.
Oh, absolutely not. But the best, well, I have a lovely silver plate, a little one, from Gwen Verdon at the year, it was at Christmas time. It says Christmas, Gwen and Bobby, 1965, on the back. And I love those kind of presents because you have it forever.
That's a cherished thing. And that's a thing that, you maybe give to Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS to auction off at the next, you know, when you're ready, when it's no longer your... Do you have kids?
No. Oh. By choice, I married, and I just wanted a career, and I didn't think the two could mix, and so I didn't.
Do you have a mix of regret and, no, that's exactly right, or...
No, I have no regrets. It worked well for me. My husband was a doctor, and...
No wonder you could be in show business. There you go.
Right? And I wanted to be around with him. In fact, I didn't go on the road except for those short tryouts, because we, as you know, we would have the tryouts. They don't do that anymore. Yeah. They do previews in town. But we always went to Boston, to New Haven, to Philadelphia, and we tried our shows out there. So we didn't mind that, because that was 3 weeks. Well, the longest one was Gypsy. I think we did 6 weeks and then extended it for one more week. But it was wonderful, because it gave you a freedom. It gave the creators a chance to try different things. And those critics were very sharp, so they could listen to those critics and use that, and yet it wasn't right in Manhattan, And I don't like, once they started previews, it's cheaper for them, no question. And today it would be so expensive probably to keep picking those things up. The only way they go now is the tours after they've opened on Broadway.
Right, or they might try something out in a regional institutional theater and open there and then bring something in if it's a hit regionally.
Yes, They do that, and that's nice. I think that's a good idea. But not usually a musical, but a straight play. I loved working in regional theater that way, because you'd work with very good writers, and they would be there through the entire time. And in regional theater, usually was 9 weeks paid. Right. I mean, you rehearsed for almost 4 weeks, which is really nice, and then did a few previews right there, 4 weeks. And, you know, you could talk. I worked with Jack Gilhooly. I worked with Noonan, you know, and...
Noonan being, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can't think of his first name for some reason. Baba Noonan.
Oh. Now, did you do Winter and Summer...
The Lions, it was called.
Okay.
And it was really... you know, a wonderful experience, because it was, again, in an intimate setting, and yet you didn't have the pressure of New York.
You were just there, and
all you had to do was work on the play. It was none of the, your personal life wasn't involved, nothing was involved. I did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf up in Albany.
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, that was that had already been done. I don't mean they did it as a first tryout, but...
You were Martha?
It's really nice to be in a regional theater and not have to worry about, you know, all the little petty things that happen in your life in the daytime. All you could do was eat, sleep, and drink, and eat, and have a massage, and think about Virginia Woolf, because that's major.
By the way, in that production, were you Martha, and then who was George?
George was, you know, it's interesting. No name. He was a professor from somewhere out Midwest that the Albany Theater, Capital Rep it's called, would bring him in almost every year, I understand. He was a wonderful actor, but not professional. I mean, he could have been, but he never went that way. He lived out there and taught and came in for, you know, one show a year. And so he was very good, very good.
Now, speaking of better than very good, we're talking with Marie Wallace, the actress. You can go see her in the one-act play New York Encounter that is happening at the Directors Company on West 43rd Street over on 8th Avenue. It's happening from now through February 4th. And now, to find out...
Oh, you know what we didn't say? How you can get the tickets.
Oh, now let's see if you can get this, because it's a little complicated. What is the website where people can get tickets for your show?
Go brownpapertickets.com.
There you go, brownpapertickets.com. And the name of the actual, because your one act is called New York Encounter, but the whole thing is what?
That's right.
It's Winter.
The whole thing is called Winterworks 2018, Look Me in the Eyes. But if a person, let's say, forgets that... When you get to brownpapertickets.com, it says find an event, and you can put Winterworks 2018 and up will pop it. But if you just happen to forget that and you put in Marie Wallace, it'll also pop up.
Oh, that's good.
So that's nice. They put a lot of different, you know, names and words in so that somebody might remember somebody else, and, you know, you can get it that way.
Now, you can also find Marie Wallace on Facebook at a page that is, and this is a long one, here it goes, Marie Wallace Dark Shadows Fan Club. So it's, you know, facebook.com/ Marie Wallace Dark Shadows Fan Club, because a lot of people, they don't know from the theater, they never saw her in Gypsy, but they know Marie Wallace from doing Dark Shadows on TV. Now, how did you get that gig?
I got that gig in 1968, and again, I was up at the Hampton Playhouse, and I remember my agent called me. Not my agent, my husband called me and said, your agent called and said, he was calling to see if you would like to be submitted for Dark Shadows. And he said, my husband said, and I said, yes. I said, okay, what's Dark Shadows? Now, it had already been on for 2 years. It started in 66, but I had no idea. I mean, I never watched television except to watch myself or my friends. And so, anyway, when I came back, I checked it out, and, oh, that looked interesting. And got the audition and went to it. And after the real audition, else and all that. That night, I got a call saying I had a call back the following day, and they were going to put us in costumes, the three people that were chosen, that they were now going to make their final choice from. And so I went in, they did my makeup, and they gave me a beautiful gown. They gave, and the others were a brunette, a blonde, and me, the redhead.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing I noticed, because I said, oh gosh, this is vampires and ghosts and things, and these two gals had wonderful, long, straight hair, just like Vampira, you know? But I didn't. I had longish hair and nice, thick, curly hair. But I thought, you know, I can't compete with them that way. But I'm going to do this. I'm going to tease my hair out like mad. And it's going to look like a lion's mane. And that's how I acted when I got in front of the camera. Because that's all they were looking for was the physical. Because they would say to you, walk forward, now walk away, look over your shoulder, give us a come-hither look, and stuff like that. And so I waited, and sort of in the corner, kept teasing my hair and watching what they were doing with the other gals. And when they finished, I was called, and I did all my little walking and vamping and lion's mane and stuff. And this may be apocryphal, I don't know, but I have been told that Dan Curtis, who was the producer and originator of this whole Dark Shadows, he was standing there watching it, and he threw his script up in the air and said, that's it, hire her.
Whoa.
How I got my first job on Dark Shadows.
Now, and the thing about Dark Shadows is it was almost more like a repertory company, because Jonathan Frid, he was there in one character for the whole time, but you were three different people.
That's right. That's right. And that was what was such fun about it. You know, when the director said to me on our last day, don't worry, Marie. I know you're being killed off today, but you're going to be back. This is like a repertory company.
Wow.
And sure enough.
And your favorite?
Months later, after doing a play somewhere, came back and they had another part for me. And that was Crazy Jenny Collins. That was a good one.
And because she was crazy? Because you
could so, because fairly recently I watched some of those episodes, and I called my agent and said, find me a crazy part. They are such fun to play.
Tell me about it. I've lived a crazy part all my life, let me tell you. Speaking of television, by the way, I don't know what this is connected to. I took this note down, but I don't know why I took the note down. But you worked at some point with Jackie Gleason?
Oh, I did, yes. I did Sly Fox with him, and Cleavon Little and Irwin Corey.
Oh.
And Arthur Penn directed it again. You know, he's the original director. And we treated it just like it was a beginning new show. Because, you see, the original idea, when they wrote it, Larry Gelphart sent it to Jackie.
Oh.
To do it. But Jackie said, I just sent it right back. Because I don't know if you remember or remember the stories.
No.
Jackie and David Merrick had big fights when he was in, I think, a show called Take Me Along. On Broadway,
yeah.
Fights, where it was in the, I don't mean fist fights, but, you know.
Well, no, but everybody hated David Merrick, so okay, yeah.
So I didn't hate him, and I'll tell you why later.
Ooh, okay.
So he said, I'll never do a Broadway play again. And, you know, he didn't have to. He was the king of television and the Honeymooners and, you know, living down there in Florida. And, but he said at one of the first rehearsals when we talked about it, he said, I made the mistake of opening the script, and I couldn't turn it down. So
but
they decided we would do a long tour across the country, then go for the opening season of the theater down in Florida, wherever it was that he lived. And after that, 4 weeks there, come up to New York and open that. Unfortunately, in Chicago, he had to have triple bypass surgery.
Oh.
So that ended that.
Because I thought
up to that point,
yeah.
we were, you know, we went to San Diego, San Francisco. We went all over, and he was wonderful.
Oh, good, because we opened the conversation about memorizing lines, and the thing about him, at least in the Honeymooners, was he had a new script every week, and half the time he'd fumble or he'd put his hands on his hips if he didn't remember a line. Was he fine in Sly Fox?
I know, but this is unbelievable.
What?
Day one, he knew the entire script.
Mm.
Day one.
Oh, boy.
And by now, he was an older man. I mean, he wasn't old and ancient, you know.
Right.
But I think we did that in 79, something like that.
Well, I guess also at that point he could memorize one script and do it over and over and over, as opposed to having to memorize a script in 3 days.
Yeah.
And do it on TV live.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Except mm-hmm. that usually it's hard to learn just at home without working with the actors and everything. But he learned it by rote. I mean, he knew everything.
Wow.
Oh, this is a fun story.
Ooh, tell me.
You know, because we were touring all over, we had a lot of opening nights. And so we had an opening night in, where did Joe DiMaggio have his restaurant? In San Diego or San Francisco? I've forgotten. I think it's San Francisco. And anyway, so he came to the party, and as did Jack Haley and all those. And Jackie liked me a lot, and so we got along well. And I remember him calling for his wife. I've forgotten her name. And he said, "Come here. Come over here. I just told him that this dame is the only one I can depend upon on the stage. Isn't that right? Isn't that what I told you?" And she said, "Yes, dear." But anyway, he said to Joe DiMaggio, "You see this dame? She is to the theater what you used to be to baseball."
Whoa.
"But to marry her."
Whoa!
Yeah.
That's
I love that.
That's...
Not that I was interested, because I had a boyfriend, and we would speak to each other every night from there to New York. But I just thought that was a fun kind of...
Yeah, but... Yeah, I mean, nobody doesn't want to hear a line like that. That's beautiful.
Right,
that's wonderful.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of wonderful people of the theater, you mentioned in passing Robert Preston, but we have to talk a bit about him because everybody loves Robert Preston.
Everybody loves him, and there's good reason. He is the most wonderful man, and I was in a play with him called Nobody Loves an Albatross.
Yes, in 1963. Yeah.
Right. And he was so great. Now, I remember when I came to the second audition, he was there. Very often the star has final approval over the director. And so I knew he was there. And then I got the part. And then I guess about a week later, we were starting rehearsals. And the rehearsal hall... You don't rehearse on the stage, you know, you rehearse in the studio. And there was a big staircase, and I started going up, and who's coming up at the same time but press? And he looked at me and he said, "Welcome aboard." And it was just, it was such a wonderful way to start a play, you know, with someone just, and in fact, when we had the lunch break, Connie Ford was in it, and Connie and I... And it turned out Preston and two other people, I've forgotten who, all went to lunch together. And I went with them, but after about 20 minutes or a half hour, I said, "I have to leave because I had to run over to my agent. I hadn't signed my contract yet." And he called me and said, you got to get over here. You're supposed to sign before you start rehearsing." So I left, and I handed, you know, quietly Constance Ford $20 towards my lunch. So when I got back, Connie handed me the $20, and I said, "Well, but that was for my lunch." She said, "I know, but Press took all of us out to lunch."
Whoa! And didn't he?
You know, not too many people do that.
Not only, and he also made I think at some point a speech to you all, like on the first day or second day of rehearsal. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gene Sachs was the director, also a wonderful actor, if you remember. And So he was just telling all of us actors of what he was going to do, and et cetera. And he was really directing it all to us. And then press spoke up. He said, "Excuse me, I just want to say something. I'm part of the company. I'm not the star. I'm just all one of you. We're all one." And again, that was another thing that made us all just relax.
Mm.
And we were fine.
Oh, that I just love hearing stories about that. I almost dread then asking about one other person that you were in a show with. You were in a play by...
I can't imagine who you mean.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's going to be a terrible story, but in a play by S.J. Perlman called The Beauty Part, which... Charlotte Ray, our friend of the neighborhood, that she was in that show. Larry Hagman, Alice Ghostly.
Alice Ghostly, David Doyle.
Oh.
I mean, what a cast.
And the star, though, was Burt Lahr, who had... He had his personal difficulties. Did he bring them to bear on everybody else, or did he just torture himself?
You know, I thought when I worked with him that maybe all comics were like this. He was so morose, and he had, it seemed to me, such little confidence in himself. And so, I mean, when we were in New Haven, we got on the elevator together, and he said to the elevator operator, said to him, "I saw the show last night, Mr. Lahr." He said, "Yeah, what'd you think of it? What'd you think of it?" I mean, you know, and so then when we were up in, I believe it was Boston, we had a luncheon with a bunch of women, and afterwards they were going to be coming to the show. It was some sort of theater party. And so I remember this very lovely woman said to him, "Oh, Mr. Lahr, all of Boston loves you." And he said, "Yeah, then where are they? They're not coming to the show."
Mm.
You know, so
he wasn't nasty to people. He just felt like constantly beleaguered, like his career was going to crest and fall. Did you read the biography by his kid, by John Lahr?
No, I didn't read it. But I do remember that when we were at Thanksgiving, you know, when you're an actor and you're away for a big holiday, the actors, the company becomes your family. Well, they become that way anyway, but I mean, especially in the holiday. So we couldn't cook a turkey or anything, but we all went over to Casey's restaurant and all had our Thanksgiving dinner or luncheon together. And we look over, and there's Bert with his son, and they're hardly talking to each other. They didn't seem to have any kind of communication. It was so uncomfortable to see it, you know? And he was a complex character, I guess.
Now, are there any people that you worked with, and maybe they're dead now, that you would never work with again if they were still alive?
Well, you know...
Come on.
Somebody, wait a minute. Once Robert Preston said this, he said, very, you know, meaning it as a joke, of course, "I'll never work with David Merrick again until he asked me."
Okay.
You know?
But you said you had a nice, you had no problem with David Merrick, you personally.
No, and you know what why? It was just a little thing. We were, you know, in the chorus, right? We were the big showgirls, and there was a number, and it's never been in since that first original show. There was seven more of us besides the dancers, the little tiny dancers. So the big, tall showgirls were in this last number, and it was a Christmas tree number. And one night, I don't know if it was whose thought it was to cut that number out. And so we were walking down the alley. We had to sign in. We had to come in and sign in. And then we were dismissed. They said, "You don't need to stay tonight. You're not doing your number." So we were walking up the alley towards our hotel, and David Merrick sees us. And he said, "What are you girls doing out here? Why aren't you in the theater?" And we told them the story. "They're cutting it." He said, "No, they're not cutting that number."
Ooh.
And he went back, and sure enough, we were in it until the end of that run. That's the only reason I say I have a nice feeling about it, you know.
All right. I mean, he didn't do it for your sake, per se.
No, absolutely not. He probably didn't know what my name was compared to Carol Joe and Barbara and Theta, you know.
Well, by the way, we know...
So did it. And so we were very happy. I mean, being, you know, your first show on Broadway, it's a big deal.
Oh, every show on Broadway is a big deal.
Every show is a big deal. But it's funny because I remember when I said, oh, if only I could just get one little walk-on or a chorus, I'd be happy. That'd be it. And as soon as you get that, then you say, well, this is great, but if only I could get a nice small part.
Right.
And then you get a small part and you say, well, it'd be nice if I had a really good part. You know, it's just... It
it's
really
the way human
you.
Nature. You get a taste of it, and it's like you get hooked, and you want to be a one-person, 8-hour show in the Palace Theater is ultimately what you want.
That's right.
Playing 15 times a week, you know, $800 a ticket, and you're set. It's good.
Right.
Well, this has been worth thousands and thousands of dollars talking to Marie Wallace. I'm going to remind you one more time before we ask her one last question, but Marie Wallace is in the one-act play, A New York Encounter. It is part of Winter Festival at the...
Winter Works 2018.
Winter Works 2018, Look Me in the Eyes. I never understood that phrase. What am I going to look you in the elbows? Look, look me in the eyes.
Well, we could try.
It'd be a little odd, but the American Renaissance Theater Company is doing it. It's at the Directors Company Theater at 311 West 43rd Street. That's around 8th Avenue, and it's running through February 4th. So you want to check that out.
They get their tickets through brownpapertickets.com.
brownpapertickets.com. And, of course, if you want to find out more about Marie Wallace, go to her Facebook page, Marie Wallace Dark Shadows Fan Club. Could it be any longer? Marie Wallace Dark Shadows Fan Club on Facebook. And, by the way, people can you can send people, that, and this is really cool, a copy of your autobiography that you wrote a few years back, yes?
I do that, too, because I also have... If they're interested in my book, I do have a Facebook page called On Stage and in Shadows, and that's the name of my book.
On Stage and in Shadows?
Yes, and right on that page, it tells you exactly how to get it, and it's a great deal as compared to just getting it through, Barnes & Noble or something, which is fine, but it's just the book. And on this situation, you get... an 8x10 of me, a page with Dark Shadows pictures, and a personal letter besides the autographed book.
And what is it, like 20-something?
It's $25.
$25 for a book, an autograph, a thing? Come on, how can you beat that, for gosh sakes?
That's right.
And all these stories and more told by Marie Wallace. So, Marie, how long do you think you will continue to act and do what you do?
Well... time will tell. I don't know. As long as something is good and funny and interesting, then I'll do it. If it's not, I don't want to go on the road anymore. I'm not interested in that. I want to stay in New York. I mean, I don't necessarily want to stay in New York, period. I like traveling and all that, but I don't want to go on a show traveling. It's not the greatest, you know, conditions. When you're young, it's great and fun and wonderful, but... no, but if something comes up in New York and I like it, I have to like it now. I don't do it just to keep busy. I don't need to keep busy. I have other wonderful things to do to keep busy.
Well, actually, let's make that our last question. What do you do to keep busy at other times? Do you still knit like you learned backstage at charity?
I used to paint backstage, I don't paint now, but I'm probably going to be taking it up again. But I did something that's very similar. I had a kind of second profession of photography, and I worked for about the last 10 years as a photographer, a special events photographer.
Oh, lovely.
And then I did my own, of course, my own work, and have had a couple of shows and won some, awards for it. And so That's been a very big part of my life, and I just like to be in Central Park. I like to read. I like to do whatever comes up.
Well, I'm thrilled that this program came up and that we have had Marie Wallace here with us in the neighborhood. Please go see her in Look Me in the Eyes and her one-act play that she's in, New York Encounter, and also keep apprised of everything that she is doing because, as we've seen, she is delightful. Marie Wallace, we thank you for being with us in the neighborhood, and shalom to you.
And shalom to you, Rabbi. I had a wonderful time talking with you. It's been great, and I look forward to doing it again.
Halavai.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.